This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
We are Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance, ESPN Radio, ESPNU. If you're just joining us, you have missed battles today. Surrounding, I guess, two people. Joel Embiid and Michael Penix Jr., the obvious duo, right? Yeah. That's kind of what we're battling about today. Not necessarily with the three of us, but everyone that walks in here, the entirety of the discussion, because we saw a day yesterday in the NBA where if you review what happened just yesterday alone, we saw the Knicks win a home game on the road. I mean, really, that's what happened. Their fans dominated in Philly, and beating the Sixers made dumb play after dumb play late, and we're having conversations about it. We closing in on the end of Embiid and the Sixers. We saw the Clippers come and have a 31-point lead against the Mavs without Kawhi Leonard, lose the lead. Luka and Kyrie lead them back to a lead in Dallas, and the Clippers still win the game. So now, okay, well, what are you doing there, Luka? The Pacers go up 3-1 without Giannis and without Dame. You want to talk about dumb play. Bobby Portis getting thrown out after 7 minutes. Not ideal for the Milwaukee Bucks yesterday. And then the one that has one Chris Canty salivating here, and that is the Suns going down, getting swept to Ant-Man and the T-Wolves last night in the NBA. What a day yesterday. What a weekend it was in the NFL, of course, with the draft.
Yeah.
Your former college teammate, Matt Schaub, is a former quarterback at Virginia, obviously, with you. And, of course, he is a former quarterback in the NFL with the Texans and the Falcons. Let's talk to him now about what we saw. Matt, thank you for joining us again. As always, we appreciate it. What did you think about what your former team Atlanta did at number 8 with Michael Penix Jr.?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I got to tell you, I was probably as shocked and surprised initially, just like everyone else was, given, you know, we all know how the draft works, and there's two modes of thinking. Draft based on need, draft based on best available on your draft board. And, obviously, starting that pick. But, you know, when you sit back and think about it and what the team projects in the future, if this is your guy, and obviously it is, and I think Michael Penix Jr. is a phenomenal quarterback and could be a great player in this league, and the opportunity for him to learn for a couple years, grow, develop. And Kirk Cousins, you know, he's not a spring chicken. He's getting older. He's coming off an Achilles with 2 years guaranteed. You know, it's kind of set up where Michael Penix Jr. can develop and then take the reins and full speed ahead. However, you know, you look at some of the holes that they have on their roster and they're trying to win right now. When you bring in Kirk Cousins and pay him $100 million guaranteed over 2 years, then the mindset should be, where do we need to fill gaps so that we can have the best opportunity to win our division this year, make a run in the playoffs? And you know, you're taking that 8th overall pick and where you could add pass rushing on the defensive side, another corner to go with A.J. Terrell, then, and you don't do that, well, you got to find those answers elsewhere.
And so, Matt, you brought up mindset, and that's the part that I want to nail down on when it comes to the two guys that are going to be in that quarterback room for the Falcons, like the overall mindset. Kirk Cousins clearly was blindsided by this move with taking Penix Jr. with the 8th overall pick. This is a guy 6 weeks ago that signed that huge contract thinking that he was going to be the guy. For Raheem Morris, what's going to be the challenge in getting those two guys to be able to coexist and work together as to not split the team, split the locker room, because those guys are in situation where they're in competition and potentially being uncomfortable?
Well, you know, I know you know this, but being uncomfortable, I mean, the competition aspect, that's always going to be there in this game. And it's going to bring out the best in both of them. But I know one thing. Kirk Cousins is the ultimate pro. He's been doing it a long time. He's going to handle it great. He's going to, you know, he'll teach. He'll help Michael Penix Jr. where he can. But it's going to be up to Michael Penix to watch, learn, understand how to become a professional quarterback. I don't see it being an issue, honestly, just knowing Kirk and that room and Raheem Morris. And I think the big thing for him, which I know Raheem understands this and he will do this, is let it be known, this is Kirk Cousins' football team right now. You know, and he's the leader, he's the quarterback, and let's go full steam ahead. And everyone's going to be on that page. There's not going to be any division within that locker room. I know a lot of the guys that are in there and on that staff, I know that that's not going to be an issue for this organization.
Matt, Michael Penix Jr. was just one of several quarterbacks that were taken in the first round, six to be exact. It was an incredibly quarterback-rich draft, but the odds are not in the favor for all of these guys to be successful at the NFL level. I know that having talent around you certainly helps, but what things do you think a rookie quarterback needs in order to be successful? What does the organization need to do to put these guys in the best position to win?
Sure, it's a great question. I think what you got to have is offensive line. I think that's the first and foremost. Have the guys up front that are going to, you know, be able to take care of you and give you the time you need to be able to go through your reads and not have your internal clock sped up just because the four-man pass rush is getting on you too fast. I think that is first and foremost, and as well as from an organizational standpoint, the support, the ability to protect when needed that young quarterback, because depending on guys' mindsets, you know, it can be a fragile situation if it starts to go the other way, especially when you talk about six quarterbacks going in the top 12. You know, you're going to some teams that needed you and have some holes, and so it's going to be a challenge. And, you know, there's going to be a roller coaster, some ups and downs. But if you have the support of the organization and they're not going to waver and go back and forth and bench you or this and that, then you have a little bit more chance for success. And I think those are two of the most important things. And then once you have that established, that you're the quarterback, now you can start filling in those pieces around you, wherever those holes might be, whether it's wide receiver, tight end, and the like.
We're talking with former NFL quarterback Matt Schaub here on Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Of course, former teammate of CC's at UVA. Matt, you've been both a starter and a backup in the NFL. What is the job of the starter as it relates to the backup in terms of helping, training, guiding, et cetera? And specifically, what is Cousins supposed to do this year with Penix?
Well, I think it's different for different situations. If you're later in your career, right, you're 10 plus and you understand your role and how to prepare yourself for your job on Sundays, then you have a little bit more freedom to be able to, you know, help the other guy out or have some instructional moments. But honestly, the first and foremost, once the regular season comes, your job is to get yourself ready to play, whether, you know, it's physically, mentally, all those things. And to spend a lot of time helping the other guy, you know, can detract from your ability to get yourself ready. And I think it's more up to the younger player to just be all ears, eyes, watch and tape, listening to the coaches, how they're coaching the starter. And you just start to formulate your plan and how to help yourself get ready. And then you just pick and choose spots where you can ask questions and, hey, why'd you do this? What'd you see here? And you know, without being too overwhelmingly cumbersome on the starter, because, you know, ultimately they got to go out there and perform. So I think for Kirk, it's going to be getting himself ready, because obviously it's somewhat of a new system, new locker room. He's going to have a lot on his plate, also getting healthy with his Achilles. So it's going to be more on Michael Penix Jr. to just learn and just be all ears and learn vicariously through what Kirk's experiences are and what he's doing.
Matt, I want to flip over to another one of your former teams, the Houston Texans. The conclusion of the draft this weekend marked the completion of the Deshaun Watson trade. It ends up being seven total draft picks for the Houston Texans from the Deshaun Watson deal, including two first-round draft picks in Kenyon Green and Will Anderson Jr. I'm curious, from your perspective, what are the expectations for the Houston Texans, knowing that the Deshaun Watson trade ends up being the backbone for their sustained success? What are you expecting from Houston in 2024?
Yeah, I couldn't be more happy for D'Amico Ryans and his first year as an NFL head coach, being a former teammate of mine, such a great leader. And, you know, with the draft they had last year and their season this past year, you know, how C.J. Stroud came around and performed as a rookie, you know, which not many people saw their team, you know, having the success that they did. But I think for them, it's winning the division. You know, I think with what the players they brought in, the style of play, how hard they play, you know, there's some big things ahead for that franchise. And, you know, health is a big factor, but, you know, I think it's winning the division there in the AFC South and making a run in the playoffs. You know, they're built that way, and D'Amico's going to have them playing hard week in, week out.
Matt, every one of these rookie quarterbacks, their team is hoping that they can replicate in some way what C.J. Stroud was able to do with the Houston Texans. From your vantage point, what makes him so special?
Yeah, you know, every team right now is winning the Super Bowl, right? All 32 teams have that belief. And, you know, I think one thing that teams have to guard against is those setting those expectations so high through the roof for some of these young quarterbacks coming in. You know, they already know. They feel like the outside pressure. They're all highly successful quarterbacks at big-time colleges. They have that expectation on themselves. I think it's important to keep the main thing, and that's just get better each day. Get yourself ready to go. How do you get better? Find a little bit more each practice and keep the blinders on and keep the focus narrowed. Don't listen to noise. It's hard to do, but the more disciplined those guys can be about just focusing one day at a time and not getting overwhelmed with trying to be what C.J. Stroud was this year or anything like that. Just go be the best version of themselves and, you know, be the leader that their locker rooms need at that given time. And, you know, I think that they'll find that they're having a pretty good rookie season and, you know, see what happens as you get towards December and, you know, into January.
Matt, let's finish with this. We're talking with Matt Schaub, former NFL quarterback, CC's teammate at UVA at Virginia. Mike Tannenbaum, former NFL general manager, sat here earlier today and said that he believes or he assumes neither Kirk Cousins nor Michael Penix want to be in Atlanta right now based on what's going on. If you were both of them or from your vantage point, who should be more annoyed about this situation, Cousins or Penix?
Well, I think if one could be more annoyed, it would be Kirk, given that he just signed and you know, he's the guy. You know, if you're Michael Penix, you're ecstatic that you were a top 10 pick and you can go and learn and develop. And listen, there's a ton of young talent on this football team, especially offensively, that I don't think, honestly, either one of them should feel annoyed or anything like that. There's an incredible opportunity to, when you got Bijan Robinson, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, there's so much talent on this team that, you know, with an offensive line that's been solid, you know, bury those hard feelings or anything like that and just go and play football, man. Enjoy it.
Matt, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon as Atlanta has become a huge topic of conversation here.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, there is your former teammate, Matt Schaub, of course, at UVA. I mean, I agree with what he said, guys. Like,
just go play football.
Kirk Cousins went there because they paid him more.
Yes.
He didn't grow up as a little kid dreaming to play for the Atlanta Falcons. He voluntarily left Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, T.J. Hockenson, and Aaron Jones.
Yeah. If he wanted to be the guy unquestioned, all he had to do was stay in Minnesota.
That's right.
That's all he had to do.
That's right.
He didn't decide. He wanted to go to the highest bidder. He went to the Atlanta Falcons. Don't fault the Atlanta Falcons for doing what's in their best interest. They guaranteed above average quarterback play in the short term and the long term by drafting Michael Penix Jr. along with giving Kirk Cousins $100 million in guarantees. I'm sorry, if somebody's willing to give you that kind of cash, you can't complain about them asking you to do your job.
But would he have made that same decision had he known that they were going to draft a quarterback in the first round?
Well, he knew they had the eighth pick, Smalls. Get the guaranteed answer beforehand then. Say to them, if I come here, are you going to use the eighth pick on a quarterback? And if they say, we don't know who's going to be there at that time, then there's your answer. If they said we will never draft number 8 overall as a quarterback, we will never draft a quarterback number 8 overall, then he's lied to. Okay, that's different. He knew they had the 8th pick. That wasn't a surprise. If you just assume they wouldn't because he signed you, that's on you. That's not on them. I'm sorry. We know Atlanta is going to be a hot ticket this year. Brought to you by Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Get great deals and the hottest tickets. Experience it live.
I just don't understand why people think that Kirk Cousins is being done dirty by the Atlanta Falcons.
Raheem Morris has said he's the starting quarterback and will be for the next few years. The same thing that happened upon arrival.
I don't get that. I don't understand. Listen, if that's what being done dirty is like, I want somebody to do me dirty when it comes to my job. $100 million in guarantees? $100 million? Come on, man. What are we even talking about?
Could last night have been Kevin Durant's last game already as a member of the Phoenix Suns? We'll discuss next. It's Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Clean sweep. Minnesota Timberwolves 4-0 over the Phoenix Suns. Suns are donezo with a 122-116 win.
Hold on.
Yeah?
The first sweep in Minnesota Timberwolves franchise history. The first one.
And the only sweep so far of the first round.
Like, they came into the season one of three teams that had never had a sweep in a playoff series until yesterday.
Okay, so let's do this.
Like, I just want to frame it properly.
Take your time to gloat, rightfully so, about the T-Wolves and Ant, because we got weeks, maybe a month or two to talk about them.
Yeah.
And then we will dive into the KD part of it. Go ahead.
I don't know that we need to gloat, though.
No, you do.
I don't want to, though. His game speaks for itself. I've been telling people that Anthony Edwards is the future face of the league. Right now, it's Nikola Jokic as the best player in the NBA. This dude, Anthony Edwards, ain't far away. He said, I think it was, a week ago? That in 2 or 3 years, he's going to be the best player in the league. Like this playoffs is essentially him not being passed the torch, but snatching the torch. And KD was the first victim. Like, Kevin Durant was a player that he grew up looking up to, idolizing, patterning a lot of his game after him. And he basically cut his heart out in this playoff series. Like, all of the trash talking, the back and forth, the jawing. I mean, you saw it again last night. This dude doesn't back down from nothing or nobody. And he's starting to figure out the game now, which is a scary proposition because he already had immense athletic and physical gifts. But now he's marrying his basketball IQ to that. And you're seeing it translate to the team going to another level. So this is going to be a tough out for anybody in the postseason, these Minnesota Timberwolves, and that's including the Denver Nuggets.
I don't want to have recency bias and speak too soon, but I don't think he's the future face of the league. I think he's the face of the league right now. He might be the co-face of the league, but I don't think he needs a championship in order to get that title. Mm. He is must-watch television. Like, think about Caitlin Clark this past season. She didn't win a championship. In her quest to get the record, she was must-watch television. And she became the face of women's basketball. I think Anthony Edwards is the same thing. You turn on the TV not only just to watch the NBA playoffs, you turn on the TV to watch him and watch his game. He's that exciting and that dominant. And I think with this win, this series win, he is proving that he is not going anywhere.
They destroyed the Suns. And that is a Suns team that should not get swept. And to Smalls' point and your point, CeCe, like, Anthony Edwards does that. And I will continue to give credit in an odd way to Karl Anthony Towns here for accepting the Robin role when he was brought in to be Batman. And I think he has accepted it in a way that actually has helped this team. And I know he's been banged up at times, etc. But I give him credit on that because Ant's awesome. Now, the flip side. This Phoenix Suns team was built so poorly, and we knew it upon arrival. Matt Ishbia comes in a year ago as the governor of the team. He buys the team from Robert Sarver, the disgraced owner of the Suns, and immediately gets Kevin Durant. 4 first-round picks and gives up Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges for Kevin Durant. Every one of us would have made that trade. You have to make that trade if you're him upon arrival.
Yeah.
What you don't have to do is trade for Bradley Beal. Just because the cost is lower than you anticipated it would be, you have to understand the way that these super teams and big threes are built is positionally. It's not just a collection of talent. Look at the Warriors. When they brought in Kevin Durant, he literally fit positionally what they were doing. He replaced a guy they had there in Harrison Barnes. Like, literally just replaced the position. Miami and Boston built the exact same way in terms of you have a shooting guard, a small forward, and a power forward center type, right?
Yeah.
They brought in two shoot-first shooting guards.
They just brought in three wings.
And a shoot-first small forward.
They brought in three wings.
It makes absolutely no sense what they did. None of us thought it was going to work like in a championship level. And they have no way out of this other than doing one thing. The only way out is trading Kevin Durant.
That's it.
That's the only way out.
There's no other way to move the team forward. Like you already seen, you're not close to winning a championship. And based on what their projected salary cap is next year and how far they're going to be over the tax threshold, I mean, this is a problem. You're talking about $104 million in estimated luxury tax bill next year for Matt Ishbia. How can you look at the product on the court and justify that type of expense? Like that's not the payroll. You already got $200 million in payroll, but then another $100 million on top of that in luxury tax.
That
is insane. You're gonna have to do something, and that something is moving on from Kevin Durant. Now, does that put you closer to the championship? I don't know. But right now, you have to realize you're not close. What's the point in having those three guys on the team if you're not close to winning a championship?
And
Kevin Durant is begging for continuity. He's saying we don't need more upheaval. We need more continuity. I'm telling you, there's no way you can just say run it back with this team, knowing how bad their bench is, knowing how bad the team performed when those three guys shared the court together in this playoff series. When those three guys were on the court against the T-Wolves in this series, the plus minus for those three guys was minus 51. Minus 51 on the court with those three guys throughout the course of this series.
It's bad.
That is awful. How much more evidence do you need if you're the Phoenix Suns to realize this ain't going to work?
Yeah, and I'm not going to blame the coach, and nor am I Frank Vogel, nor am I going to blame the general manager, James Jones, because I believe this is an ownership, governorship move as to what happened here. Smalls, let me put something in perspective. I'm looking through the salaries for next year.
Mm-hmm.
The only player in a player-for-player type deal that's roughly near, it's within $9 million here, salary-wise, that I could see a team saying, okay, we'll take Bradley Beal and we'll give you this guy. The only one, and I'm not even sure this team would do it, would be the Nets for Ben Simmons.
Oof.
That's it. I cannot see a player that I'm, because I don't even know that based on the rules, the Suns are allowed to do a two-for-one deal. I don't even know that they can do things like this because of what they've done with their
roster. You can't move Bradley Beal.
That's my point. I don't even know that the Nets would do that. I think they'd rather have Ben Simmons.
You can't move Bradley Beal. You won't move Devin Booker.
Is he going to ask to be moved though?
Here's
the thing. If I've got to move Devin Booker, I'm probably moving Kevin Durant too. We're just going to blow the whole thing up. And Bradley Beal, if you want to be held hostage here while we're losing and tearing it down, then that's your business. Nobody wants to live in a house while it's being renovated. So I mean, I guess. That is your only option and your only way forward. If you're going to try to win a championship while you still have Devin Booker in his prime, then I think the only path forward to doing that is trading Kevin Durant.
Yes or no, we got 30 seconds.
There's a reason why teams are moving off of those big threes and going to two-man tandems. Based on how the rules are, the tax aprons are, this is the reason why.
And the Suns went the other way.
You're seeing it illustrated. This is the reason why. They built the team based on the previous rules, and now that we have this set of rules, they found themselves in the jackpot.
Yes or no, Kevin Durant has played his last game with the Suns. Smalls?
Yes.
Yes.
CeCe? I say yes to. Mel Kiper Jr. will review all seven rounds of the draft with us next. It's on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio. We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Can you remember the last time you had fun on a bike ride? Electric e-bikes, the number one seller of e-bikes in America, is here to bring fun and joy back to biking. Their riders routinely say they feel like kids again riding these bikes, and one even said, I'm a 46-year-old man, and I can honestly say I haven't had this much fun on a bike since I was 10 years old. These e-bikes from Electric are fast. They're up to 28 miles per hour. They offer lightweight and foldable e-bikes, so you can easily take them on the go to explore national parks, campgrounds, pants, and more. Even if you don't have a truck, trailer, or a bike rack, many of their models will fit in the trunk of a car. They also offer long-range batteries that provide over 65 miles of range so you can explore further and longer. Just head on over to electricebikes.com today and take their bike quiz to find a model that's perfect for your needs. That's electricebikes.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
NFL draft in the books, and there's a theme developing from the draft. Dan Patrick said it. Matt Miller then said it. Put Mel Kiper in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. 275,000 people there on Thursday night when we were there in Detroit. Never happens if not for our next guest, Mel Kiper Jr. Mel, does that make you uncomfortable or proud when you hear people saying that you should be in the Hall of Fame?
Both, I really think. You know, proud, obviously honored to hear that. I mean, when I started out in this business, people were hating on the draft, saying, why are you wasting your time? They were telling me I'm wasting my time, get a real job. So honored from that standpoint to see it come from that to where it is now. But certainly uncomfortable because I know how much the NFL hates me, so they'll hate me even more when I'm considered for any Hall of Fame, which I will never get into, by the way. The NFL would never allow me in the Hall of Fame by any stretch of the imagination. I've been hated for years. They never really wanted the draft televised in the beginning. They wanted it to be like Christmas morning, you celebrate every pick, and I obviously was criticizing some, so I don't think the NFL would ever allow that, guys.
Well, all right. Well, I mean, we can try to help as best as we can because you should be.
I think you hurt. The more you mention it, the more you probably.
Oh, I actually hurt.
Let's let it lie.
Okay. All right. Well, I just hurt the candidacy. Wonderful.
I appreciate that, guys.
Mel, I'm going to work backwards here. Everybody wants to start with the first round guys, but I'm going to go with the undrafted guys. Sam Hartman headlined the undrafted free agents. He signs a contract with the Washington Commanders, guaranteeing him $245,000. Which is unheard of, but I'm curious from your perspective, who's the undrafted free agent that you expect to make the team and make an impact in 2024?
Well, a couple of guys. Bo Braid signed here in Baltimore. Bo Braid was my highest-rated player, safety out of Maryland. Ironically, ends up here, but he was the highest-rated guy. Field Yates had a very high opinion of Bo Braid, so a little surprising. I said it on the telecast, guys, that the three positions that have been devalued. Doesn't mean they're devalued in terms of their importance to an NFL team. It just means devalued in the draft or definitely running back. We saw that again. And then, obviously, off-ball linebacker. We saw that again. Edgerrin Cooper's a great player. He slipped down further than you would have thought considering his production. And then safety. Safety has definitely been devalued to the point where a guy like Bo Braid ends up going undrafted, which was really surprising. I really like Jack Westover out of Washington. He was a key guy for Michael Penix Jr. Thought he'd be a late-round pick, but certainly he went undrafted. I think he's going to have a – I would be surprised if he didn't have a solid contributing career in the NFL as an undrafted free agent.
Well, Mel, before we get to the first round, I'm going to follow CeCe's path. What was your favorite pick in rounds two and beyond that maybe a lot of people aren't talking about?
Well, I think when you look beyond round two, and I think that's where you get into some of the real good picks, I was interested to see Austin Booker, where he would go. He ended up going to the Bears in the fifth round. They traded back in to get him. Showed a lot of promise. You know, his 1 year went from Minnesota Golden Gophers, where he didn't do much, to Kansas, where he showed really well. Then he had a rough draft process and did test great, and all of a sudden he goes in the fifth round when I thought maybe he could be a second or third round pick. So he's the kind of guy there that I think was very interesting just to see him drop the way he did. And he's got pass rush ability, natural pass rush ability off the edge. I go with Edgerrin Cooper, 45th pick overall to Green Bay, who had a really good, solid draft. I love their early draft. The reason they got a B, not an A, I love what they did early with Morgan, Cooper, Bullard, and Lloyd. And after that, some of those grades of the players they drafted thereafter weren't enough to get them better than the B. But Edgerrin Cooper is what they needed, an off-ball linebacker who you can move around. He had a ton of sacks and tackles for loss. And what they did, they moved him outside. Now, he went unblocked some, but he's got speed to the football. He's got great instincts and awareness. And Edgerrin Cooper for that Green Bay team that, by the way, has a chance to be maybe a Super Bowl contender with the first four picks, Morgan, Cooper, Bullard, and Lloyd, all, I think, playing key roles this coming year.
Mel, let's talk about number eight. It's been the number one topic of conversation. Your thoughts on Penix Jr. to the Falcons?
Shocked. I was shocked when that pick was. I had no clue. Nobody did. I thought Dallas Turner, mark it down. Maybe Byron Murphy II, heard a lot about him maybe going to Atlanta, defensive tackle. Of course, they addressed defensive tackle in the second round with Ruka Roro from Clemson. They addressed pass rusher with Braylon Trice in the third round. So they addressed those spots, but they didn't take Dallas Turner or Byron Murphy II. They took Michael Penix Jr. And they had just given Kirk Cousins that huge deal, right? To say, well, it's going to be, you know, Kirk's, you know, not got coming off an Achilles. He's getting up there in age now. I see why they did it. I like what Terry Fontenot said about, hey, we have conviction on this kid. You got to. You better have that to take him at 8. There was talk that the Raiders were trying to move up to get him ahead of Denver. So he became the hot guy. I get that. He's 24 years of age coming up. Is he going to sit? How long are you going to sit a 24-year-old quarterback? That's my question. I think he's got to play. But Kirk's there. But he's coming off an Achilles. And he's going to be, you know, at an age where, you know, coming off an Achilles, you never know how that's going to go. So they said, well, we're never going to pick 8th again. We don't plan on ever picking 8th again for a while. I get that. So you, in order to get a quarterback, you have to trade up, and they have to give up a lot of draft capital. I get that, right? But I just don't think Michael Penix Jr. can sit for 3 years. I think that would be ridiculous. So how they handle this, how this plays out, these quarterbacks always play. Kirk off the injury, I think Penix has to play right away. It's going to be really fun to see how this plays out.
Mel, I had a head coach tell me once upon a time, you never mistake activity for achievement. So with the Philadelphia Eagles leading the way with 8 total draft day trades over the weekends, was it more activity or was it achievement?
I think it was achievement. I really like what they did. And they got themselves fortified for next year with a 3, 4, and a 5 extra, which is already setting them up for a big draft next year where they can maneuver around and do some really good things. They either target a player and go get them or just accumulate a lot of good players. They needed secondary help. And to get Quinyon Mitchell without trading up, all the talk leading up to the draft was, and I had heard this from teams, they're going to move up. They're not staying where they are. Well, they saw how the board unfolded, started coming off offense, 14 straight offensive players. We're in pretty good shape. They got Quinyon Mitchell, then they traded to get Cooper DeJean, who can play anywhere. He'll be a safety more than likely with them. Jalix Hunt was my sleeper guy. I thought he might go late second. He's a pass rusher who needs to be developed, but they have the ability to let him watch and learn and be coached. And then Anaya Smith, who's going to be, a punt kick returner, and a kick return game is going to be more important with the rule changes. And then late in the draft, Johnny Wilson, the most unique player in this draft, and ironically, I compare him to Harold Carmichael. Very few people remember Harold Carmichael playing in the NFL. I do. When I was a kid growing up, watch a 6'7 wide receiver, you know, who nobody could handle, and now the Philadelphia Eagles get a guy who looks like him, and it's a unique situation because look at Harold Carmichael was once in a lifetime, hadn't had anybody since then, and now Johnny Wilson comes along and ironically goes to the Eagles. So how he dropped that far is beyond me. I think he can be a nice guy for Jalen Hurts to throw it up to him, and good luck for these 5'10, 5'11 cornerbacks trying to cover this guy at 6'6 and a half.
Mel, as the dust settles on the draft, we love to assign the winner and loser moniker to certain teams. Give me a team that whose draft in totality you absolutely loved and one you were really disappointed by.
Well, we talked about I'll go to Pittsburgh. I thought, and I gave them an A minus because they're Pittsburgh. Okay, I'm in Baltimore. You're not getting an A, pal. You ain't just getting an A.
Tell him about it, man.
Well, now he's really voted out of the Hall of Fame. Now he's out. Now he's out of the Hall of Fame. The Rudys just took him out.
Yeah, no way. No. They got an A minus for a reason. They're the Steelers. But they really had an A. I just had a little fun there with that. But to fortify the offensive line the way they did. If Peyton Wilson stays healthy with that knee issue, I thought they really did a good job. And Roman Wilson's going to be a nice slot receiver in this league. So I thought Pittsburgh. And then to go to Atlanta, they had the lowest grade. I get the reason. I just feel like, you know, the defense has got to be better. I think Brandon Dorlus could be the key. Ruka Roro needs to be developed. But Brandon Dorlus and Braylon Trice are ready to go. They played a lot of football. Dorlus is versatile. I think what's going to determine the fate, whether this C grade should have been an A grade, is going to be Penix Jr., what he develops into, and whether they get the defensive up front 7 guys, and they drafted also the linebacker. But in terms of overall, how do they do in terms of what Bertrand does an inside linebacker, who I compared a little bit to a Zach Thomas type. But really, what do they get out of Dorlus and Trice to make up for not getting Dallas Turner? And also, 3 years from now, how is Dallas Turner performing? Is he a 12, 15 sack a year guy, or is he a disappointment? So those players, those are the guys who will determine whether this grade is a C or whether it should have been an A, and whether Atlanta proves and Terry Fontenot proves everybody wrong.
We're talking with Mel Kiper Jr., of course, ESPN senior draft analyst, and he's got the First Draft podcast available on the ESPN app and wherever podcasts are found. It happens every single year. We saw it last year just as an example with the Raiders' Aiden O'Connell. Mel, is there a non-first-round quarterback that you anticipate will start games this year?
No. They're looking out. Look at this, the first year ever in the history of the draft where we had that gap between Bo Nix at 12 and Spencer Rattler dropping all the way down to New Orleans and with the fifth round area. So, you know, and Spencer Rattler, some people thought could be a second round pick. He went to pick 150 in the fifth round. I was surprised by one thing, that and that they just basically forgot about these guys. I mean, Michael Pratt went 245 in the seventh round. Michael Pratt beat Caleb Williams in a bowl game and had a great career at Tulane. Had four different offensive coordinators. I guess you're going to struggle a bit. Chris, you know, this four offensive coordinators in 4 years. He had three in high school. That's seven in 7 years. He's a smart kid. He had 44 starts. I don't all the experience. He can move. He's an underrated thrower of the football. He's an underrated athlete. To me, yes, he regressed a little bit this year from last year with a changeover in personnel. He didn't have Tyjae Spears, but to see him and then go to Green Bay, where's your future in Green Bay? You got Jordan Love. So he's not going to do anything there except, you know, compete to be a backup. I think he's got a chance to be a starter, but you go to Green Bay, that's not doesn't bode well there. So, but Michael Pratt getting going all the way down to the seventh round surprised me. I didn't think he'd get past the fifth.
All right, Mel, we got to go in a second here. We got about 30 seconds, I should say.
Sure.
2025 draft. Obviously, it's never too early. Your top five right now for the 2025 draft.
Well, we got to put the quarterbacks up there now since they're overdrafted every year. Got to put Shador Sanders from Colorado and Carson Beck from Georgia right in there. And Luther Burton from Missouri is going to be a receiver that everybody's going to look at. So, but I want to see what happens with these quarterbacks. Again, Shador, and then you got Travis Hunter. You got to put him in there, right? The Colorado corner, do everything player. Deion says they're kind of a package deal. So those are some of the top names for next year.
Mel, you are the best. We'll be at your Hall of Fame induction ceremony, I guess, based on what you're saying. Never, as a matter of fact. Never. We will never. It will never happen.
That could be a Fantasy Island type little show there for us to do.
Mel Kiper Jr., thank you as always. We appreciate it, Mel.
You got it, guy. I'll bring some crab cakes for you. See you, guy.
Perfect. Crab cakes at the Hall of Fame ceremony that he said the NFL hates him, so it'll never happen. Monica McNutt, ESPN NBA analyst, will join us next. Talk about the postseason. It's Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
What a day yesterday in the NBA. Phoenix Suns eliminated. Four games sweep.
Dunzo.
At the hands of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
A team that has never swept anybody ever.
The Indiana Pacers are now up 3-1 in that series.
Barely. That game was a lot closer than it had to be.
I thought Milwaukee was actually going to win. I'm telling you, I thought going in Milwaukee was going to win that game. Then Bobby Portis got thrown out after 7 minutes. Then I didn't think they were going to win that game.
No, well, it was a close game until the end of the third quarter. It was still a close game. And then you saw Indiana pull away.
Dallas somehow was down 31 points at the hands of the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard. The Clippers then blow that lead. Dallas comes all the way back. Irving led them, and Dallas ultimately did not prevail because the Clippers somehow, out of nowhere, get clutch play from James Harden, which clutch play and James Harden doesn't normally go in the same sentence. And then there was the Philadelphia-New York game where somehow the Philadelphia 76ers did not have home court advantage while at home because the Knicks fans just took over Philadelphia. I don't want to hear it again about Heat fans from Pat Costello or anybody else. Because Philly fans, Smalls, come on now. Philly fans don't have a leg to stand on now anymore. That was an embarrassment by Philly fans yesterday.
Because they let New York infiltrate their stadium is what you're saying?
I mean, that was pretty strong, was it not?
It was. It absolutely was. But I still think as a Heat fan, you need to pipe down because your fans don't show up for the beginning of the game.
Well, there's things to do. I mean, you know.
I'm just saying. I don't think that just because that happened to Philly that you as a Heat fan can all of a sudden say, don't come for Miami. Because I think a lot of people should come for
I don't think the Heat fans are letting the visiting fans scream bleep our MVP player on the way out the door. Like, that is a different level. The Wells Fargo Arena sounded like a Knicks home game in the fourth quarter.
I mean, were they wrong?
As we welcome in Monica McNutt.
Oh, that was you that screamed that? I thought that was Mike out there. I was looking out there. Come on now. All right, Monica, you were there.
I was
for there. That. ESPN NBA analyst, of course, Knicks analyst as well.
Mm-hmm.
At any point, did you sit back and say, "Where am I?"
No, because Knicks fans travel. So I knew where I was, and I knew what fan base was in the building. So I didn't have that moment. But I will say, I was asked like 2 weeks ago to rank NBA arenas environments. And Philly was on my list. I've been in Philly for other games versus other opponents. So I did have the same kind of moment Jalen Brunson had postseason where I was like, oh, yo, like Knicks fans are in Philly because Philly is raucous on its own. So, yeah, shout out to the Knicks fans. They're dope.
All right, there's a bunch of things we got to get to. I want to talk about that game specifically down the stretch because I believed in Philadelphia, which obviously I was wrong to do. You are a former player. There was dumb play after dumb play. I don't know how else to say it. The idea that they didn't know that Lowry was going to miss the free throw and Embiid passing up the mid-range jumper, but the one that drove me insane, Monica, why was Embiid on a singular full-court press against Jalen Brunson?
I don't have the answer, Slay. I don't have the answers for that one. It's funny, though, that everybody goes to that run. I wonder if this was fourth quarter. There might have been one in the third as well.
It was the third quarter.
There's a third quarter.
Yeah, between the six-minute mark and the three-minute mark.
Boom.
Yeah.
I was saying to my play-by-play partner, Pat O'Keefe, the Knicks need to capitalize on these consecutive empty possessions on behalf of the Sixers.
Oh, terrible shots. And Kelly Oubre Jr., the three-pointer, Tyrese Maxey, Embiid had a couple where he threw out of bounds. Like, it was awful. Awful basketball.
Yeah, it was a bunch of them. And to be fair, if the Knicks had truly capitalized on every one, they'd probably take a double-digit lead at that point in the ballgame, right? Yeah. But they're still making a comeback in the third quarter. And so it was consecutive empty possessions, and you could feel the momentum shifting. The third quarter ends with an and-one play by Jalen Brunson. Ties the ballgame at 76, take the lead 77-76. And I literally said on radio, shout out to our little behind the scenes calls that we posted on Instagram. I looked at my partner. This is giving me shades of game two in the Garden. And sure enough, the Knicks just find a way. First of all, Jalen Brunson. Everybody that said anything other than A1 cornerstone of your franchise, run it back. Like, pay your penance. Because his ability to
I said that.
Come on, Evan, we got to get you some rosaries or something. I
have to own it.
That's
fair.
I think what is so unique and powerful about him is, one, he always says that the magic is in the work. He's incredibly level-headed. But when you look at the Knicks, and I'll make the same comparison of the Minnesota Timberwolves right now, they're all pulling in the same direction. There is no question about who's going to take the big shot, who's going to make the play. It's Jalen Brunson, and everybody else falls in line. Yesterday, they are without Mitchell Robinson. Isaiah Hartenstein has 5 fouls. Devin Harley played
in the third quarter.
No Bogdanovich with that ankle injury. Precious Achiuwa didn't even play the first two games of this series. And he comes in and has a masterful performance in terms of making an impact defensively. 4 blocks, 3 in the fourth quarter. So to me, this is a team, as they continue to say, that just has the utmost belief in themselves, and they find a way.
Am I out of pocket for saying that the East is a two-team race and the Knicks are one of those teams?
I'm actually going to go 3 because I think Indy's playing really good ball.
So you think Indy?
I think it's like the.
You think Indy could beat the Knicks in a 7-game series?
I think that's going to be an interesting
round?
Series. I'm going with the Knicks, but that's not a cakewalk. It's Boston, and then it's the Knicks and the Pacers. Now, the Knicks are a better matchup for Boston, in my mind.
Uh-huh.
But Indy's playing good ball.
They almost lost yesterday with no Lillard and no Giannis.
Sort of, almost, right? Sort of. They was going to lose that game. They're also playing with house money. Like, they've arrived ahead of schedule.
Oh, for sure.
They're playing light, free and light.
Okay.
Monica, I wanted to ask you about another series. You mentioned Minnesota playing like a team. They sweep Phoenix. What do you make of that? What was your reaction to that? And what do you think the future is for not only the Phoenix Suns, but Kevin Durant?
So, unpopular opinion, Michelle, like, I have no reaction. Like, I have no reaction to this because I looked, when we got this little thing with the playoff matchups, I was like, ooh, that's not going to be good. Like, you could see it. I don't understand why we're shocked. There's no such thing as an on-off switch. The Minnesota Timberwolves defense is legitimate. You look at postseason stats, team stats, their stats eerily similar to, the Denver Nuggets. Like, Ant Edwards is truly that dude. And for as much as I am a KD fan, they have no depth, they don't have size, and they had not played consistently good basketball at any point during the season outside of, I believe, a stretch in January where Point Book looked really great. Like, if I have a Achilles heel in this business, y'all, it is falling for young teams very early. I have fallen for the T-Wolves, and rightfully so. Like, the Suns are old and not deep enough.
This is the year to do it, though.
Yeah.
This is a changing of the guard year, it feels like, in absolutely. The NBA. And I want to go back to the Suns, because I refuse to put this on James Jones, the general manager, and I refuse to put this on Frank Vogel, the head coach. This is, to me, on the majority governor of the team, and that is Matt Ishbia. He, upon arrival, he gets Kevin Durant. No issues with that. He brings in Isaiah Thomas, which is ridiculous, as his right-hand man, who is awful as an NBA executive, and his move is to go out there and get Bradley Beal, who plays the exact same position as Devin Booker, who in essence does the exact same thing offensively as Kevin Durant. They are horribly built, and I believe that comes from the governor of the team, the majority governor, and not James Jones and not Frank Vogel.
Preach. I'm with you on that. And I remember we were at the layout hanging out in Fort Greene Park in Brooklyn when the Booker trade goes, or the Beal trade goes down. Literally great vibes in the summer, but we're looking at each other like, how's this going to work? Like, is there enough? Is there enough basketballs? Like, what are we doing? This is redundant. So I'm with you.
Luka Doncic, Dallas Mavericks. They lose both of the games where Kawhi Leonard doesn't play in that Clippers series. Now the series shifts back to LA. What do you make of that series? Who do you expect to come out on top?
This is the toughest series to call in my mind. I am encouraged by the comeback of the Mavs, but not discouraged by the Clippers either. Does that make sense?
No.
Okay, all right. Let me try to make it make sense. the Clippers, or the Mavs coming back from down 31 was impressive.
Okay.
Right? They didn't complete it, but it was impressive. I had questioned whether or not the Clippers were young and vibrant enough to keep up with what the Mavs were able to do. They held yesterday, but they're holding on it's a very fragile hold, right? So I think right now momentum is in the hands of the Mavs.
Monica McNutt, amazing NBA analyst. You'll see her on Get Up, First Take as well. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance, here on ESPN Radio and, of course, ESPNU.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.